This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Nigerians who fled the country amid the Boko Haram insurgency say their hope for the new year is to return home. But they say their government should help to socially integrate them.
That was Moki Edwin Kinzeka reporting from a refugee camp on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. We'll have more on the story coming up.
Also, Somali prosecutors are charging five men in connection with the October 14th truck bombing in Mogadishu that killed 512 people. And the DRC today restored internet and text messaging services after shutting them down on Saturday.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Nigerians who fled their country because of the Boko Haram insurgency say their hope for the new year is to return home. But they say their government should help to socially reintegrate them. Moki Edwin Kinzeka visited a refugee camp at Manao and the village of Gawar on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria to find out the refugees' wishes for the new year.
It is a festive atmosphere at Gawar village, one of the communities in the Mayochanaga administrative unit on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, hosting thousands of Nigerian refugees. Staff of the World Lutheran Federation, WLF, a global communion of 145 churches in 98 countries, share gifts and pray with Nigerians fleeing Boko Haram atrocities in their country. Obin Nzali of the WLF says they have organized an outreach program that will last 2 weeks to encourage both the refugees and their host communities to continue to live in peace.
La présence des populations réfugiées dans cette partie du pays.
He says the presence of the refugees has an impact on the living conditions of the host communities, whose resources are already stretched, and so they have brought together the refugees and their host community members as a sign of encouragement and to promote the spirit of living together in such challenging moments. Among those who have come to listen to the message of peace is 28-year-old Emmanuel Kaladjivi, who fled from Borno State in Nigeria in January 2017. He says he lost his brother and has not seen his wife, but is happy that God has allowed him to see another year in good health.
I am very happy. So many people died in 2017, but as God leave us in life, now we are very happy to see this, the new year.
Emmanuel says his wish is to return to Nigeria and reunite with his relatives and friends, but he is still expecting assurances from the governments of Cameroon and Nigeria that the torture people endure at the hands of Boko Haram has ended and they can live in peace. Gawa village is situated 5 kilometers from the Minawawo refugee camp, which is home to some 72,000 refugees. In 2017, 12,000 people arrived. Thousands voluntarily expected to return, according to the government of Cameroon. 40-year-old Ali Shwek, who arrived in the camp 3 years ago, says he is not yet thinking of returning. He says he does not want to relive the horror he experienced when Boko Haram raided his village of Atargara in northern Nigeria, killing so many and torching all the houses, making them refugees after he escaped. To him, living in the camp is better than taking an adventure to his hometown without knowing if peace has returned.
We always come together to worship in one center. And after the mosque in the morning, at about 12, we go to a certain place where we have the band. The people are dancing, chatting, sharing gifts among friends and well wishers.
The governments of Cameroon and Nigeria, together with UNHCR, signed the tripartite agreement for the voluntary repatriation of Nigerian refugees living in Cameroon in May 2017. WLF's Annette Mbane says they are also advising the refugees that their repatriation can only take part on voluntary basis.
The accord signed between Cameroon government, Nigerian government and the UNHCR is all about putting in place the legal framework to permit the refugees going back to Nigeria in a safe and dignified condition.
A UNHCR survey conducted in Minawawu on the intentions of refugees to return to Nigeria revealed that 7 out of every 10 people expressed their intention to return as soon as the situation is safe in their areas of origin. In May 2017, the United Nations reported that food shortages in northern Cameroon were raising tensions between local communities and Nigerian refugees displaced by the Boko Haram conflict. The government said just one-third of the $690 million needed to meet the needs of displaced people and host communities this year has been received. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Minawawu, Northern Cameroon.
Somali prosecutors are charging 5 men in connection with the October 14th truck bombing in Mogadishu that killed 512 people. 4 of the suspects appeared before a military tribunal in Mogadishu yesterday, while the 5th defendant is on the run. Somali authorities have said they have no doubt the radical Islamist group Al-Shabaab was behind the October attack, although the group did not claim responsibility. The court said hearings for the defendants will start late next week.
The DRC today restored internet and text messaging services after shutting them down on Saturday. The government shut down the services the day before demonstrations to demand that President Joseph Kabila keep his promise to leave office this year. Various news organizations report at least 8 people were killed when security forces tried to stop the demonstrations. Opposition groups and Roman Catholic groups organized them. The UN has called on Kabila to keep his promise to step down. The Secretary General urges all Congolese political actors to remain fully committed to the December 31, 2016 political agreement, an AU spokesperson said late Sunday. That agreement called for Kabila to step down after elections, which were to have been held in 2017. But the government has repeatedly delayed the vote, blaming civil unrest. The delay has prompted fears that Kabila may seek to extend his rule. Kabila, 46, has led the DRC for 17 years. His second term officially expired in December 2016.
According to a recent UN report, migration is on the rise. There are now an estimated 258 million people living in a country other than their country of birth. This has increased by almost half since the year 2000, the report says. Earlier this month, 60 migrants returned from Libya to Sierra Leone with help from the International Organization for Migration, or IOM. Migrants from Kuwait were also returned earlier this year. Nina DeVries in Freetown has more on what their experience was like.
Mariama Doe is one of hundreds of migrants who came back to Sierra Leone this year. She's relishing her freedom after having spent 10 months in Kuwait. At first, she thought she was going to work as a security guard. When she got there, she was sold as a housekeeper through an agency to several families.
I was not happy in Kuwait. Always I can cry. Every day I can cry when I remember home. And I remember my 2 kids. I can cry every day, every day.
She says she only got paid once the entire time she was there and was forced to work almost 24 hours a day. When she got sick, there was no sympathy.
I don't have choice. They will say, go and work. You are here for this work. You don't have to sit down. You don't have to rest. We'll buy you for this job. You have to work.
She managed to escape while the family was out one day. Through the help of a stranger on the streets of Kuwait, she was directed to the International Organization for Migration. After several months in a shelter, she was brought back to Sierra Leone with the IOM's assistance. It helped her reintegrate into society by providing financial compensation to set up a business. She now sells clothes and says it's enough to keep her going. Abuse of migrants is happening in many places. Most recently in Libya, there were allegations of migrants being sold in slave markets. About 60 migrants were brought back through the IOM and the Sierra Leone government in mid-December, and another group in late November. Umaru Berry is one of the migrants who just returned from Libya. He left Sierra Leone because he was jobless and homeless.
And when my little money finish, I don't have place to stay. So sometimes I sleep in the beach. Sometimes I sleep in the ghettos with boys.
Most migrants use Libya as a gateway to Europe. The United Nations estimates about 700,000 migrants are in Libya. Barry says he wanted to stay in Libya, but he soon realized life was not any better. He also describes not always getting paid for work, and his wife, who he met in Libya, often had payments withheld. They eventually managed to get in touch with the IOM in Libya and started the process to be repatriated to Sierra Leone. Barry, his wife, and their son arrived in the early morning hours of December 14th on a chartered flight. It was bittersweet.
I don't have money, but I'm too okay for my life and my family.
The IOM will also compensate Barry, and he's hoping to start up a business. For now, he's staying with his brother. And although it's tough starting over yet again, he's grateful to be out of Libya and back in his country. Nina DeVries, VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
In Malawi, the push for more female members of parliament was dealt a blow when the government said it would not consider a proposal to create 28 automatic seats for women. Malawi ranks among the countries within the South African development community and the world where women are underrepresented in government. Lamech Masina has more from Blantyre.
Justice and Constitutional Affairs Minister Samuel Tembenu said the government removed the provision because it would be a disadvantage to women candidates in some constituencies. He said the provision would also involve a laborious and complicated legal process, including amending constitutional provisions and other electoral laws. Proponents of the provision say its removal is unfortunate. Esime Kayinja is a member of the Special Law Commission that came up with the proposal. She told reporters that the 28-seat idea was the best option among many that were intended to increase the number of women in parliament.
There were so many options. There was an issue of taking quotas at party level. There was another option of maybe just taking one constituency per district to be attached to women. That was also did not work.
She says although the proposed 28 seats might sound irrational, it gave an assurance that Malawi would achieve at least 30% of female representation in parliament, as required by SADC protocol, which the bloc adopted in 2008 with the goal of ensuring equal rights for women and an end to discrimination. Out of 193 members of Malawi's parliament, only 32 are women. Emma Galia is the national coordinator for the NGO Gender Coordination Network, which has long headed Malawi's 50-50 campaign for equal gender representation.
For the executive to remove that recommendation, now I'm beginning to doubt if Malawi is really serious about achieving gender equality and women's empowerment in the area of politics. And it is very sad that it is happening to us in this way.
Kalia says Malawi should have learned from other countries like South Africa, Mozambique and Uganda, where similar provisions have helped increase the number of women in decision-making positions.
We need to impress on government that they have an obligation to make things work for everybody in Malawi, in politics and outside politics, and that is about gender equality.
Gender activists say they are attempting to have the provision reconsidered. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Nigerians who fled their country because of the Boko Haram insurgency say their hope for the new year is to return home. Somali prosecutors are charging five men in connection with the October 14 truck bombing in Mogadishu that killed 512 people. And the Democratic Republic of Congo today restored internet and text messaging services after shutting them down on Saturday. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Russian Security Council Secretary Nikolai Petrushev said the Islamic State militants are migrating from Syria and Iraq to other countries like Libya, Yemen, and the Sahel countries. Last week, Islamic State media released a video boasting of hitting a military airport in Sinai as the Egyptian defense and interior ministers were arriving. Patrick Dunleavy, a senior fellow at the Washington-based Investigative Project on Terrorism, explains to VOA's Mohammed Al-Shanawi the serious threat the militants pose to other parts of Africa and what should be done to counter this threat.
It is extremely serious. All the security reports that I've looked at, including the Russians, the UK's Intelligence and Security Committee reports, and also a report by the Investigative Project on Terrorism regarding ISIS transition from the physical virtual caliphate, they all point to this area, including North Africa, Central Africa, and the Sinai Peninsula, as being vulnerable to their group. And in regard to the Sinai threat and the airport, we must remember that in 2015, the Wilayat Sinai Group, which is an ISIS affiliate, they claimed credit for the bombing of a Russian Metrojet that killed over 200 people. And in November, they also took credit for the attack on the mosque in Bir al-Abed that killed more than 300 people. So there's been strong ties with ISIS affiliates in the Sinai Peninsula. And as ISIS loses ground in Syria and Iraq, they're going to move to those areas where they feel that they have a foothold in.
It seems that the ISIS ring leaders are adjusting their tactics and creating secret domestic cells in various countries. Is that a fair assumption?
Yes, it is. It's a very accurate assumption. Again, because of the fact that they're losing in conventional warfare, they're losing ground in Iraq and Syria, they are now transitioning back into more of a guerrilla operation. And so in doing that type of operation, they use covert cells. Now, they use covert cells for a variety of reasons. Among them, they use the covert cells to gather intelligence and to provide logistical support for their fighters when they arrive. They also use the covert cells to recruit new members. They infiltrate a community. They look and see who would be sympathizers that they could approach. So the use of covert cells is a very, very common tactic by guerrilla and terrorist warfare.
So how should these tactics be countered?
Well, I think the governments in those areas that we're talking about, whether it's in North Africa, the Maghreb, or in Central Africa, or in the Sinai, I think the governments in those areas have to focus on the communities that are most vulnerable, not only by providing additional security forces, but they have to build ties with the community leaders. And part of building ties may be that they have to address legitimate grievances that the communities have. So it's not just a matter of putting strong security forces or additional security forces in the area, but they're going to have to build ties within the community that's most vulnerable.
There are so many ungoverned areas and vulnerable states in Africa that could be used as safe havens for the Islamic State migrant terrorists. What should be done before they create such enclaves?
Well, I think the first thing that has to be done, again, is those particular areas in the Maghreb and Sahel regions, and also in Algeria, Tunisia, Morocco, Yemen, Libya, there has to be some sort of shoring up of the governments there. And there has to be a commitment on the governments in those areas to fight terrorists. They're going to need support. They're going to need support from the United States, from European allies, to give them the resources they need. But in addition, again, to those security forces, it's almost the same method they're going to use for covert cells, which is to build community ties. We know right now that in the Sinai Peninsula, ties between communities there and the government leadership in Cairo has been somewhat strained over the years. So again, if we just put in security forces, and security resources without addressing the communities, it's not going to be successful.
That was Patrick Dunleavy speaking with VOA reporter Mohammed El-Shanawi in Washington.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warns the world is likely to face many complex and new dangers in 2018. In a year-end message, Guterres appeals for greater unity to overcome these threats and create a more peaceful world. Lisa Schlein reports from the UN's European headquarters in Geneva.
When UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres assumed office 1 year ago, the world was in the midst of a hopeful moment. Negotiations to end more than four decades of division on the island of Cyprus appeared to be moving toward a successful resolution. Guterres jumped into the fray and worked tirelessly to produce that outcome. Unfortunately, the Greek and Turkish Cypriots were unable to bury their differences and live as one nation together. The UN chief acknowledges his hopes for a peaceful 2017 have not materialized. Unfortunately, he says, the world in many ways has gone in reverse. Reflecting this darkened mood on the eve of the new year, Guterres says he is issuing what he calls a red alert for our world.
Conflicts have deepened and new dangers have emerged. Global anxieties about nuclear weapons are the highest since the Cold War. And climate change is moving faster than we are. Inequalities are growing, and we see horrific violations of human rights. Nationalism and xenophobia are on the rise, and as we begin 2018, I call for unity.
During this past year, Guterres has had many catastrophic events landing on his desk, begging for resolution. These include Yemen, the world's worst humanitarian crisis, with some 8 million people on the brink of famine and 1 million infected with cholera. Persecution and violence in Myanmar that forced more than 650,000 Rohingya refugees to flee for their lives to neighboring Bangladesh. Syria, approaching its seventh year of civil war, which has killed hundreds of thousands of people and displaced more than 11 million. Conflicts in South Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, Afghanistan, Iraq, and many others that continue to take a heavy toll in lives and property. As the world's leading diplomat, Guterres must retain a sense of optimism that things can get better. He says the world can be made safer and more secure. Conflicts and hatred can be overcome. But only, he adds, if world leaders unite to bridge divides and bring people together around common goals. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.